the heart of me.
So deep in my heart, you're really a part of me.
Baby, under my skin.
This is B-Sol here of the Vault of Horror, and I'd like to welcome you again to the Vaultcast. This week I have a very, very special guest that I'm honored to have with me, and it is none other than the author of Infected, the author of Contagious, and now the author of the brand new book Ancestor, Scott Sigler. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. First of all, to just let everybody know, the new book, Ancestor, is coming out on Tuesday the 22nd, correct?
Mm-hmm. June 22nd, you got it.
Okay, and will it be an online and a print kind of thing? Will people be able to get it both ways?
Yeah, that's right. I try and serve them up in as many formats as possible. So it'll be hardcover in bookstores. It should be front of the store in Borders and Barnes and Noble for about 3 weeks, which is kind of neat. And then I also give it away as a podcast where I serialize it. So it takes probably 24 to 25 weeks to tell the whole story. People can check that out at scottsigler.com. We'll be running it there. And then it's downloadable audiobook. It's in CD form, all the standards, Kindle and things of that nature.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the book, the new one, and the other ones, obviously, that people know you from. But I'd like to talk a little bit first about some of your influences. Now, I understand that you're a big fan of classic horror, and you got a lot of your influences from your dad, which I can completely relate to. Is that true?
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm.
So how did he kind of indoctrinate you in all this stuff?
Well, we used to watch, The Sunday creature feature was a staple, watching Dracula, the Wolfman, Frankenstein, all those things. And then I live in a real small town in Michigan called Sheboygan, and we had a show that was on one of our local TV shows called Count Zappula. And it was the classic stuff from the 70s and 80s where you've got some local dude dressing up like a vampire, getting out of a coffin, cracking jokes, and then they show some old horror movie, and we would watch those, and fell in love with all that. That was just fantastic. Get to sit with my dad and my brother and watch those movies, and it was all, it was scary for a little kid, but it was, you're there with your dad, and it's the middle of the day, and everything's cool, and then he took me to see King Kong, the 76 King Kong, mm-hmm. when I was just a small thing, and that one scared the crap out of me, and that was the first thriller or scary movie that I had seen in the movie theater, and when King Kong started banging away on the giant bamboo fortress, I was crying, and I wanted to leave, and he thought that was funny, because we paid for the movie, so we weren't going anywhere, and we stayed the whole thing, and I was crying, and I was crying as we left, and I'm wiping tears away. We walk out the doors, and the first thing I asked him after we left was, when can we go see it again, and that's when I kind of figured it out from an early age that was really fun to be scared in that kind of controlled environment, and just fell in love with big monster movies, and all my early books were big monster stories, and then the monsters gradually got smaller until they got to where they are now, which is roughly people-sized or people monsters. So he's a big influence on all that.
Yes, and well, talking about that, the people monsters, or even, some people might argue that now your monsters are microscopic, you know what I mean? So, where does this fascination come from with disease-based horror? People who know Infected, who have read Infected and Contagious, where does that come from?
That comes from reality. I mean, I do everything I can to present stories that are rooted firmly in hard science. So every element of my books is, if it's not already happening now, it's right around the corner. They're all very plausible. And part of my job as a storyteller is to string these pieces together in such a way that when you get to see the really bad parts of the book, sure, logically, you know that this is fantasy and this isn't really going to happen. But within the construct of the book itself, you as the reader just allow yourself to dive all the way in, because I've established everything. Everything is set up, and you're like, yes, I can totally see this happening, and then you get to really enjoy the rocket ride of the rest of the book. And part of that is an enormous amount of research in biology, and it's just a general love and fascination for science, and that leads you into viruses and bacteria and these things that, you know, in your body you've got more of than there are people on the whole planet. You know, and so it's mesmerizing the scope and scale and also the potential for devastation that is there if just a couple of proteins get switched, a couple things go here where they should go there, a minor mutation, and you can be looking at a whole lot of damage and a whole lot of trauma. And then finally, in studying all of that, as I started to get a better understanding, and I'm no scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but as I start to get a better understanding of how the inner workings of a cell happen, and you start to see that our bodies are really just collections of parts, and that you could hack those parts. You know, the ability to hack the human body and to hack cells and cell reproduction is not only possible, it's things that we're doing right now in a lot of different areas in science and in medicine. And then if you take a devious mind and go, well, if we can readjust how cells work and what they do and what they make, well, then there's all kinds of crazy, horrible possibilities that can come out of that. So most of my influence as far as bacteria and viruses, it's all just a wow factor. When I'm reading this book or New Scientist or watch them on TV and I see some scientists say, well, take a look at this. And I said, I'm like, holy crap, is that awesome? If I have that reaction, I'm pretty sure that other people will have that reaction too. So I'll work to incorporate that into the story.
Well, now it's funny because from what I understand, one of your earlier influences, and I guess for a lot of horror novelists, it would be Stephen King. But I think in your case, it was, and I'm wondering if maybe something like The Stand had an influence on you.
Well, Stephen King is, I always cite him as my primary influence because of his ability as a storyteller and his ability to use regular people in regular settings to make the horror more tangible and more believable. So his primary influence on me it hasn't been his monsters and it hasn't been his settings, because largely he's using the supernatural for almost everything. And if it's not supernatural, then there's a ton of dream sequences and other things, and that's not really my style. But his ability to make every character believable, and then put them all at risk, and to teach the reader early that if you read one of his books, every character is expendable on every page. Hmm. You never have any idea who's actually going to make it and who's not. That's the real strength that's the real influence he's had on me, is how to tell a story. How to keep people turning the page.
Yes, that's very true, actually, in terms of how he deals with characters and just that unexpectedness is a big part of that, I think. But
it's always been for me because, you know, you've got, say, a Robin Cook, who is exceptionally educated in the scientific area and can create all kinds of neat plots that you look at and you go, wow, that's amazing. Is that possible? And he's also able to get you questioning that, is this real or is this dude making it up? Which is, if you can do that as a writer, that's a home run. He can do all that, but the same four people live through every book. So when those four people get thrown into the bottom of a well filled with sharks, you're like, okay, I guess there's not really a problem. They're going to get out of it. And, you know, just life being so short that I really don't have time to read a story if I know how it's going to end. So that's where the Stephen King factor. That's why I think the key to his success has been is the not knowing what's going to happen next and people wanting that experience.
Well, in terms of your own novels, one thing I was really interested in talking about is just the fact that you, in a lot of ways, you were kind of a pioneer in the field of in the area of web publishing. I mean, unless I'm mistaken, Earthcore was the first novel to basically be podcast only, at least in the beginning. So how did you get involved in that aspect of publishing?
I just stumbled into it, basically. I was supposed to have a book out in 2001, and that deal wound up falling through after the 9/11 recession, and then my imprint got scrapped. So, and it took me about 3 years to get the rights back to the book because there was no one, it was a subsidiary of Time Warner. And when Time Warner scrapped something, I mean, they got rid of everything. So we couldn't even get a hold of a lawyer to get the rights back. 3 years had gone by and I'd lost whatever hype I had around the book and it never came out. And then my agent and I started from scratch. And while we were starting from scratch, going resubmitting letters to publishers, et cetera, I found out about podcasting. say, hey, look what I did. Look at this new method. It's going to change everything. That it could give me some media attention. And the real meat of that was I was so sick of the submission process and having, you know, some intern decide whether your book even gets passed up the chain of the publisher. And podcasting showed me that, like, I can get myself out there directly to the person who's going to be enjoying the story, and then they can figure it out. It's me directly out to the listener. There's no middleman. There's no gatekeeper. And I was really confident that if I could do that, if I could hurdle the gatekeeper and get out to the end person, that people would really dig my stuff, and it kind of worked out.
So in a lot of ways, it's basically circumventing the traditional, you know, publishing scenario, you know what I mean? To just get to go directly to the people.
It's exactly what it was all about. And I, you know, and having spent, so, like everybody else is into horror, you know, at some point you have spent a lot of money on books and movies and gone, if I could have only known the quality of this thing before I bought it, I would have never bought it. So I figured, put the power back in the hands of the people. You know, here, I'm going to give you everything I've got, and I'm so confident in its quality that you will hear it and you'll still go buy it even though you got it for free. And that clearly doesn't happen every time, but it happens a lot, and it happens enough that I'm able to go out and still sell the book. So it was about hurdling New York publishing, getting past people whose job it is to try and guess what people want. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult job, and it's a lot of pressure on these publishers and these editors, and I don't envy them at all. It's not an easy job, but If I can skip them and go right to the end listener of horror content, then I'll do pretty good.
Well, obviously there's a lot of upside to this. Have you found, though, that there's any kind of a downside that you've experienced with it?
I haven't really seen any downside at all. The only downside is a little bit, which is ironic, a little bit of a lack of respect in the industry and from reviewers and things of that nature. They're like, well, gosh, I guess he had to give it away for free. He's not good enough to get a publishing deal. And it's, that is the only drawback. But it's really minor and insignificant, because I don't really care what those people have to say anyways, as long as the people listening to the stories are entertained. But by and large, it's incredible, because anybody can hear about me, they can go to my website, start listening to the stories for free, and without spending a dime of their hard-earned money, they can find out whether they might or might not be a fan, and they can find out whether or not it's worth their money. So that's the foundation of everything, and that's good. And then the other drawback you hear occasionally from people who aren't doing what I do is, oh, your stuff's getting ripped online and piracy, and you have all these people listening who aren't going to pay for it. You're giving it away for free. And that's true, but only in the light that all of these people stealing it and all of these people listening for free probably would have never heard about me in the first place if I was just another book spying out in a bookstore somewhere.
Right.
You know, my model, Stephen King doesn't need to do my model. That would just be giving away the farm. You know, I mean, he can sell his books, and there's people willing to pay for him. He's got such a big audience. But for an up-and-coming author like me, it's a way to get in front of people who otherwise would never hear about you and who otherwise would not spend their money to try out something brand new. And why should they, when there's so many great authors they know already out there who's putting out books all the time? So the what people consider to be the drawback, which is you're giving it away for free and people are pirating it, putting it online, that's all just free advertising. That's all free advertising that I would never get if I wasn't giving it away for free. So if 10,000 people wind up listening to me because of my free stuff, that's 10,000 people that probably would have never heard about me otherwise. And out of that 10,000, maybe I get 1,000 who are interested in buying it, and that's like 1,000 customers found that would have never been there in the first place. There really is no drawback to it.
And the new one now, and this is interesting, the new book, Ancestor, was actually first released, as some of your other books were, in that format a few years ago, isn't that right?
Yeah, we put it out in 2005, and I've been working on the book since 1996. There's just right. an enormous amount of research that's gone into this thing. To make it real and believable. And a podcast in 2005 got several thousand people listening to it. And then as I continued to podcast books, we decided to put Ancestor out in print on April 1st, 2007. And we put it out with a small Canadian imprint called Dragon Moon Press. And with no advertising, no marketing, no media coverage, no PR, nothing, it was the number one horror novel on Amazon. It was also number one sci-fi, and it was the number two fiction novel overall. It was like number seven out of all products on Amazon. Amazon, it was number 7. And it was up there for a couple days. So that was pretty cool. So it, you know, it wasn't Ann Rice numbers or Stephanie Meyer's numbers, but that was still a really big deal. And some people in New York were considering Infected, which is the first book I put out under Crown Publishing, and they were considering it right when that happened with Ancestor. And that was neat. It was a neat experience because, like, well, we really like this book. We're considering it. Then all of a sudden, boom, you're like, wow, this guy can go number one in horror on Amazon all by himself. I bet we could do something really cool together. And that's what led directly to the print deal. And part of that print deal was buying up all my old books, Earthcore and Ancestor, and getting them off the market so Crown, which is also Random House, could, you know, control the marketing, control the brand. We bought up Ancestor, and since they bought it, they're like, well, we're going to put this one out as well. So,
right.
So this is now the third book put out with Crown Random House, and I've given it away for free, sold it in print once, and now it's pretty tricked out this time.
Well, yeah, I was going to say.
You can do a lot as an individual author, but it's a different ballgame when you are working with the professional New York editors to make a product that's even better.
Absolutely, and again, it's coming out on June 22nd, and a few days ago, because you mentioned, you know, how it's all tricked out this time out, a few days ago I put the trailer for it up, and I mean, which I understand you made it yourself, which is pretty amazing in itself, and you actually have a cameo in it, which is awesome. But tell us, well, first of all, I want to just read this here. There's a great quote on the site about the book from you, just saying that it has more attitude and knockout power than Tyson back in the day, which I just love. That's a great quote. But tell us a little bit about this new one now, and the book, and also that trailer, which is pretty impressive.
Well, Ancestor is a story of genetic engineering, and it is a biotech company that is trying to perfect xenotransplantation. That is when you are taking animal parts and putting them into people. Now, we've been doing this for 30 years now as a culture, starting with baboon hearts and moving into different pig organs. A lot of animal parts will work in a human. So if you have a failing heart, you can get a pig heart, you can hook it up, and the thing will actually work. The biggest problem is your immune system attacks it and kills it because it thinks it's a foreign body. The irony is that your immune system kills you, and of course, it's part of you, dies along with it. And biotech companies are trying to work on ways to overcome this immune response. In the book, the company's called Janata, and they, through their research, they genetically sequence the ancestor of all mammals with the thought that they're going to go back to a baseline genome and then tweak it from there with human organs so that they basically wind up with the equivalent of a sheep or a herd animal that's got human organs. They put this thing out to pasture, let it breed, boom, they're not only saving millions of lives every year, they are making billions of dollars. Because right now on Earth, a person dies every 5 minutes on the planet because there are no replacement organs. There aren't enough replacement organs. And this is as a science goes horribly wrong horror novel. So they, instead of winding up with a 200-pound herd animal, they basically get themselves a 650-pound pack predator. And due to isolation reasons, they are stranded to this thing and have to figure out how to get around it. So it is a summer blockbuster movie in book format. It's really over the top. There's a lot of very fun sequences in it, some great kill scenes in it, and all of that is anchored by real accurate science, so that it kind of makes a different experience than vampires or werewolves, because this all could technically happen.
Right.
And the trailer, I'm a big believer in trailers. I mean, publishing is down, readership is down. If you want to get people to read books, you're competing against the internet, against video games, 500 channels, Metroplexes. There's a lot of competition out there for people's time. So you got to go out there and prove to them that, yeah, this is definitely worth you dropping $25 to pick up this book and spend your time reading it. So we went out of the trailer. We took a crew of 18 up into the mountains in California near L.A. So we get some snow because the story is set in winter. And it was pretty awesome. I mean, they built dollies up in the snow. We were doing tracking shots up there. It was freezing cold. We had all these good-looking people just freezing their butts off, running around in front of the camera. And then that turned out pretty well. And then we started looking at the footage we had, and we're like, well, you know what? It's a monster story. It's just not going to work without the monsters. So Kevin Capizzi is does work for some movies. And on his computer, he kind of went to work, and we built the Ancestor, and actually got some CGI monster shots in the trailer and everything. So it's people are loving it. People love the trailer. The fans love it. What's really kind of ironically exciting is some people are down on, like, oh, that monster could have been so much better, because those people are literally comparing the trailer to, like, a Peter Jackson trailer. You know, it's not as good as a Peter Jackson trailer. Like, well, of course it's not as good as a Peter Jackson trailer. I don't have $40 million to make these friggin' movies. So in a way, even the digs on it are turning out to be quite a compliment, because it's like we're pushing the bottom level of a feature film trailer. But for something we put together ourselves, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, to even be considered, you know, or to be compared, for it to be compared to trailers for movies, it's pretty amazing, especially when you, even if it's unfavorably, just that they're in the same universe, especially when you think of how book trailers started, you know, it's pretty impressive, I think, to even be mentioned in the same breath and to be compared that way. But on the subject, though, of movie blockbusters, actually, there's one thing I have to bring up here, one other big thing I wanted to ask you about, which I think probably a lot of fans of your books are curious about. Obviously, for a lot of people, Infected was the way that they discovered you, a lot of your readers. And I was curious if what you know or what the status right now is of the movie, of the Infected movie.
Right now, it is there is no Infected movie. Mm-hmm. It was originally optioned by Rogue Pictures, who made Shaun of the Dead and Doomsday and some other cool flicks. Then they were bought out by Relativity Media while, you know, we had scripts for the movie, and they were working on trying to get producers lined up and make the whole thing, and then Relativity Media came in and bought out Rogue, and Rogue had, I think it was 32 properties in development, and Relativity said, we're losing 27 of them. They only wanted 5. So,
wow.
In fact, it wasn't one of the ones they wanted to make. So that killed the project, and then the rights came back to me. So we've been waiting for Ancestor to come out and kind of using Ancestor as the lead Sigler movie, if you will, because it's a much more traditional summer blockbuster type flick. So
right.
We're going to try and get Ancestor made, and then from there we think we'll be able to get Infected and Contagious and the other books turned into movies.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going to be very anxious to see those come to fruition. You know, your books are very cinematic, and you know, obviously they'd work well that way. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are dying to see that happen. So, you know, we've all got our fingers crossed.
You know, and it's interesting because Ancestor is a more doable movie, but it's also a big budget movie. There's no way around it. This isn't something you're going to be able to do on a, you know, $2 million sci-fi movie the week budget. Whereas Infected, I can easily see Infected done as a mid-level indie, or somebody who's got a film under their belt and really wants something knockout can come in and make that, because the vast majority of that movie is set in one guy's apartment.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see. One of the things I'm really hoping for is for the book sales to increase, so the brand name increases, so I get to talk to different people about who wants to make the movie. Because I learned from the Rogue experience that I learned a lot of stuff about movies. I don't know how to make a movie. I can't raise $20 million. You know, there's people who can do that. But I also learned about better how to listen and how to identify people who are in love with the project and just want to get it made. So as the books continue to increase, I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully someday to get out there to find those indie filmmakers who can come in and just sell me, like, yeah, we're going to make Infected. Here's how we're going to do all the cool stuff. And to be able to give that opportunity to a young filmmaker out there, I think that'd be really sweet.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that Ancestor might be the very first one. So just one more reason for people to check it out. And again, one more reminder, Ancestor, the new book from Scott Sigler, is out on Tuesday, June 22nd. And again, I just want to thank you, Scott, very much for coming on and talking about your work and the new book and all of it and just your interest in online publishing. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
For each time you do, just the thought of you makes me stop before you begin, cause I got you under my skin.
Oh, I got you under my skin.
under my skin.
Yeah, I got you, baby, under my skin.
Oh, holy mackerel, under my skin.